It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here with the latest Microsoft news from CES. It's going to be a short show. Next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 294, recorded January 10th, 2013. Shoot the messenger. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we get personal training on how to use SkyDrive each and every week. Fortunately, we do that before the show begins. Hello, Paul Thurrott of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com.
Hello, sir.
I see you had a wonderful time in Las Vegas. You got your hair cut.
I actually did not go to Las Vegas.
No, really? What a shock. But maybe Mary Jo Foley is at CES. No, you're still in New York.
No, not there.
All about Microsoft.com. You know who else wasn't there? Microsoft wasn't there. First time they didn't keynote.
They were sort of there.
Really? How were they?
They were lurking.
They're sneaky, those guys.
Oh.
They are.
They lurked.
Well, Steve Ballmer made an appearance at the Qualcomm opening keynote.
Oh, and see, that's cheating, because that's his keynote. He should.
It used to be his keynote. Well, I think it was one of those rite of passage things.
Oh, okay. Yeah. To give him the baton.
You have to haze the new guy.
Mm. You know, you didn't miss anything. It was the worst CES in history.
It always is.
It is. It gets worse each year. And oddly enough, more people go each year.
Yeah.
I think it's running on its reputation. There's a cover story on The Economist this week is what happened to innovation. And it's got, Rodin's the thinker statue sitting on the toilet. And the caption is this the last great invention of humankind? I do feel like there wasn't a lot of innovation there. There was a lot of kind of, gadget
stuff. Yeah. It's a tough week for me because I follow a lot of news feeds and it's just crap, 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 crap. You know, like, look at this stupid cover for your iPhone.
Yeah, it's a lot of that.
Stupid accessory.
A lot of that.
I just, the people who focus on that stuff, I just don't understand it. But, the companies that I care about the most, obviously Microsoft, but, Apple and Google. Not there. You know what I mean? Like, right. So, these are companies that all have their own events at their own times throughout the year. And I think that's probably the way to do it. I mean, there were some companies I do care about there. Lenovo, Samsung.
Lenovo had some interesting things. They had robots.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah.
But Microsoft is a perfect example. They made their announcements in October on their own time, in their own way, with 100% attention instead of a million different things going on the side. And I think one of the things it's telling is here we are Thursday, the third day of CES, mm-hmm. and all of the stories have pretty much stopped.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, CES coverage is over.
Because it's just overload.
And there wasn't enough to fill 3 days worth of coverage.
Yeah, now people can wander around in there like it's the end of times. Which, kind of is.
One of the big story was the absence of 3D TVs. I mean, they were there, but nobody mentioned them. Nobody said, hey, this is 3D. Come on over. Look at our... No. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I think we're over that.
I think we got away. That. Yeah, that was nice. Well, let's...
Quadraphonic sound.
I kind of jumped you ahead in the rundown. So we'll go back here to the numbers that... We heard 40 million Windows 8. Last month, and now they're saying 60 million. So they're on that 20 million a month target. I mean, isn't that what they did with Windows 7?
Unless next month is 10 million.
Ooh, that would be bad.
There was,
yeah.
But yes, sure.
So far, so good.
The one thing I came to some time ago, I think I mentioned that, I must have mentioned it on the show, is that, we talk about how they were always selling 20 million a month. It was pretty regular.
Right.
Like, too regular, almost suspiciously regular, so we'll see. I mean, obviously, this is something you got to look at long term. I think the case that we had made a month or two ago, whenever it was that, you launch a version of Windows like this, you expect a big bump. When you price a version of Windows totally lowball like they did. I mean, there were people who could get this thing for $15 if they had bought a new PC over the past several months. Most people could just spend $30. There has never been a version of Windows made available this broadly, this cheaply, ever. And selling 40 million in that first bump is not necessarily fantastic. Obviously, 40 million sounds like a big number. But, and it is a big number. But when you, you know, go back down to 20 immediately right after that, I mean, I think they're going to settle into this. It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if we look at 20 million a month for the rest of this thing's existence, which I find, again, suspicious.
Your ears are probably burning because I quoted you on Twit.
What did you say?
Yeah, the article that you wrote about, we might as well face it. Windows 8 is kind of a disappointment. Am I misstating that?
Did I say that?
Well, I'm going to go to your blog article where you talk about people who just won't give up. saying
those stupid people.
Those people who just won't give up saying Windows 8 is selling. Like,
well, okay, so I'm basing this on what NPD said about the actual retail sales data, which is that Windows 8 certainly has been disappointing from that standpoint. So there are different ways you can look at it. We had the story a few months ago where Windows 8 did not get off to the start that Microsoft predicted it would internally.
Right.
NPD has now issued two reports over the launch period and now through the holidays where they have said that Windows 8 has not outsold not only Windows 7 at its launch period 3 years ago, but Windows sales from a year ago. So sales of Windows and Windows-based PCs a year ago were higher last year than they were this year.
And you blamed, which I thought was very interesting, the netbook for this.
Yeah, this is a tough one because that 20 million figure, again, you know, it was awfully regular. And I think one of the artificial things that happened during the life cycle of Windows 7 was that Windows 7-based netbooks really took off. They were one of the things that I think bumped up sales of PCs, which is good from sort of a units perspective. But the problem with that is it establishes a market where people now expect to pay nothing for computers. The average selling price of a portable laptop, a Windows-based laptop, is $420.
Yeah.
The average selling price of an Apple laptop is $1,419. It is literally $1,000 more.
Yeah.
So obviously we don't have netbooks today. But what we do have, if you can look at Best Buy, and I did this myself. I mean, not on purpose, but I happened to be walking around Best Buy. I guess it would have been, I don't remember if it was right before or right after Christmas. But I was struck by how many really cheap computers there were that didn't have touch. You know, $300, $400, $450, right in that price range. And that's what people were buying over this holiday selling period, not the touch computers, because those computers, of course, are much more expensive. I think one of the interesting things about Windows 8 is that we've talked a lot about how it creates this market for new form factors, hybrid computers, tablets, that kind of thing, which never was part of the Windows world before, not really. I mean, aside from the tablet PC stuff, but it's sort of moving the market in that direction. And I actually think that that's an important thing for Microsoft and the PC business overall in a way that we didn't understand before, which was, you know, Ultrabooks came around and everyone said, and I said this, the same thing, you know, these things are going to be huge because they're such great computers. But people still didn't buy them in mass numbers, I think because they were so expensive. Because, you know, you could look at a really thin laptop and say, yeah, that thing's really beautiful, but it's $1,200. I mean, why wouldn't I just spend $450 on something that's a little thicker and heavier and save, you know, 2/3 the cost of the Ultrabook? And so I think with touch, what you get into is this notion of, okay, now it's not exactly the same thing. See, it's not just thinner and lighter. It also has like this new capability. We've got this new, you know, runtime engine with new apps and everything that makes sense when you have touch. And so this is I think the second attempt, then the first big one by Microsoft, Ultrabooks being the first, to kind of break people out of this netbook / low-end PC habit that we all have. And we'll see if it's successful.
So you're saying the problem is that people don't want to spend more.
Because they never had to.
Well,
they haven't had to in
a while, yeah.
Right.
And I've been telling people for years, you know, that cheap computer isn't necessarily...
We lost Mary Jo, by the way.
She decided this was not worth her time. And
I was going on there for a while. I felt kind of bad about that.
Hey, can somebody call Mary Jo back? Thank you. We don't need her.
I think she's texting something. Let me see what she says.
We're calling her back. Maybe she just decided to go for a walk. But I, you know, I've been telling people for a long time, because that's happened. I see this. I am on the front row, front lines of this, because on the radio show, that's who I'm talking to. It's people who want to spend $200 on a computer.
Yeah.
And I'm so and I, I'm telling
so Mary
them,
Jo,
you know,
Mary Jo's back, so I should back. Repeat everything I just
yeah,
said.
Yeah, would you just say it all over again? Did you miss it all, Mary Jo? You get the premise that people are just so used to paying so little for computers, they're not willing to buy the kind of hardware they really need to make Windows 8 sing.
Yeah, when I actually, so when I was in Best Buy, it must have been after Christmas because, no, I'm sorry, it was before Christmas because there was a $299 Dell computer that came with other stuff. I think there was a printer and like a mouse and a, you know, some other, it was like $299. And if you go into Best Buy today, you can buy that same computer, but it's just the computer. It's $299. I have many times thought about just buying it to find out, but I already know that what's going to happen is if I bought this computer, but I bet it's okay, right?
Really? You think?
Obviously, it's a piece of crap.
Right.
But I bet it would be enough for people to get by on. And that's the thing, you know, you just, you know, people aren't going to buy a more expensive computer when they don't have to.
But Paul, I'm going to, because I'm an old fart and I remember Commodore 64, VIC 20. There was a real blip in the computer revolution for several years caused by people running out to buy the VIC 20, which was a really cheap computer.
Yeah. 5K.
Yeah. And it couldn't do diddly.
Couldn't do anything.
So they'd get it home. They'd open it up, they'd set it up, they'd do a few things, it'd end up in the closet. And I think it severely hurt the industry for several years.
Well, Leo, not coincidentally, at the same time that the netbook was racing off to, you know, in the Windows 7 world, Apple released the iPad. And so for the people who were disappointed by the performance of netbooks, you know, it's like, let's take everything that's bad about the PC and put it in the crappiest hardware imaginable and make the experience even worse.
Was originally XP. At least we got to Windows 7.
Yeah, but still, you know, it's just, it's like the worst of all possible worlds. And then Apple comes up with the iPad, right? I mean, this is, this contributed, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Right, to the success of the iPad.
Right.
There's a reason Apple didn't make a netbook and made the tablet, even though, by the way, they designed both of those things. They only released the one. Because even they were like, we can't make a good one of these things. They're just terrible.
Right.
You know? The computers you can buy today that are cheap. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think we should talk about go back to the 60 million. No more netbooks. Let's not talk about netbooks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back to the 60 million. That's a good number.
It is. But, you know, I think it's interesting to talk about what the 60 million is, which they finally talked about this week when they announced the number. They said the 60 million is the total of the number of people who've upgraded. So if you bought the cheap upgrade disc and you upgraded from a previous version of Windows to Windows 8, but it's also the number of copies that they sold licenses to the OEMs. So this is not how many copies are in the hands of consumers on new PCs and notebooks and tablets. It's the number of licenses sold to OEMs. And then I went back and asked Microsoft, I said, when does an OEM buy a license? Like at what point in the process? And they declined to comment. But then I asked somebody else who is one of my contacts and he said, OEMs buy licenses in bulk every month or every set number of months. So this could just be a number of licenses lying around that haven't even been installed.
And by the way,
they buy 18.5 million copies every single month.
Well, but it goes to my point that that is how Microsoft can make this number so even, right? Because they probably don't have to record those sales immediately. Like they can probably stretch them out. And, you know, Microsoft, we talk a lot in this podcast about how Microsoft wants, you know, a regular income. They don't want these spikes, you know, at product launches. And I think this is all part of the same thing. So,
this number does not include also enterprise license sales. So, you know, when they made the big deal recently out of the Department of Defense buying all these copies.
$600 million worth of Windows. That's not included.
Not included. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's another number that's not part of that.
That's
this is why
it
makes it so
years,
hard.
But still, that's a lot of units.
But it allows them to deliver the message they want to deliver because they can say anything.
Right.
You know,
it's nice, isn't it? That's why I should have studied accounting instead of Chinese. it's a foreign language, but more useful, I think.
I just watched that movie Looper, where the it's about time travel, and the guy comes back and he says, "You got to go to China, not France." He says, "No, I want to go to France." He says, "I'm from the future. Trust me, you want to go to China."
I love that moment. I love that moment. It's so great.
Yeah. Trust me,
but I want to go to France.
Yep. But yeah, that's why when we're trying to talk about, like, you know, what does NPD say versus what does Microsoft say? And then Microsoft also threw out there, we also have crossed the 100 million app downloaded mark. Mm. So some people are doing the math and saying, oh, so less than two apps per person is being downloaded from Windows 8. But
no, that's not,
you can't do that either, because the number doesn't work like that, right?
Right. So we don't know how many of those 60 million are actually in service in the field.
No,
it's not.
We don't.
Well, what percentage of that? Yeah.
Right.
I mean, is it half? Is it?
There's no
could
way
it be
of knowing.
As many as two thirds.
Right.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It's unknown.
It's got to be somewhere in there. I mean, you know, these things are two very different numbers. Like Mary Jo said, you know, Microsoft's 60 million figure is OEM licenses and upgrades, which I assume includes both retail purchases as well as those electronic upgrades. NPD measures retail sales in the United States. You know, they look at retailers. They look at what people are actually buying. When people see data that they don't like, they always try to pick it apart. And the one thing I will tell you about NPD is that Microsoft uses them and trusts them. You know, I had ripped into NPD years ago about something, I think about the Zune. And I got a note back from a guy at Microsoft who said, I don't think you understand how important these guys are to us. We believe and trust their information.
Which is interesting, because you think Microsoft would actually know the actual numbers, but I guess they don't.
They do know the actual numbers, which is why you're not hearing them. Because they get this data right from NPD. You know, NPD used to do a lot of public reporting, and now what they do is they give you a very vague outline. And what they do is they sell the detailed reports to Microsoft and to the other companies that are selling things at retail.
Right, that's how all these guys work.
Yeah. Oh, you know, one other weird thing to talk about with these numbers. I asked Microsoft, too, if this total, the 60 million, includes sales of tablets and PCs running Windows RT, and they wouldn't comment.
Oh, jeez.
Like, why wouldn't you comment about that, right?
Yeah, that's weird. Well, it's...
I know.
I don't know. They're very secretive about things. RT, I don't think, has sold very well overall.
Many. No. No. But I would think this number must include it. They say it's a cumulative number, but to me, cumulative doesn't necessarily mean for sure that it includes RT, because they don't. Windows RT is not Windows 8, and this was a Windows 8 count.
Hmm.
I know.
Hmm.
Microsoft. This is our life. This is our life.
We should coin a term for this. It's like we just don't know.
We just don't know. Here we go again.
But you know, it could be worse. You could be covering, I don't know, the CIA. They're probably
Are, Leo. You know, I mean, you pretty much have to just take what they say at face value.
Well, here's it's an opportunity for y'all to dig deep and find the real answers.
You're like a Chinese fortune cookie. It's not a problem. It's an opportunity.
It's a challenge. Not an opportunity. It's a problem. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you can't. They're publicly held, so they have certain things they have to say.
Right.
And it sounds like they say no more.
They also have a lot of lawyers, and I'm pretty sure they're saying only exactly what they have to say.
Everything they have to say, and not one word more.
You know, Apple is a publicly held company, but they never break down the number of computers and devices they sell in the United States. They've never actually reported that.
Right. None of these guys have to do that.
Interesting, you know.
So, although Microsoft makes Apple seem forthcoming, to be honest with you.
Right, but I'm just drawing that distinction. In other words, I don't think most normal people would, you know, even really think about this stuff. You know, you sort of, you hear publicly traded
million.
Company and certain assumptions come into play, but actually
60 million, that's the number people hear. And that's why we do this show, because then you guys who are the experts could parse it and say, well, here's what that number probably means.
Yeah, but increasingly parsing it results in me like laying on the floor crying. I mean, you know, it's not a lot of real insightful activity here.
It's like chewing on air, nailing Jell-O to a tree. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. I think
I love you trying to find something positive.
I am. I'm trying to find an upbeat, positive thing to say about this.
I will say this. So, you know, Tammy Roller made this announcement, and she had some other facts and figures, like Mary Jo pointed out, the number of apps. And that stuff's really interesting. But, you know, she also had this not-so-subtle attempt at publicly repairing the relationship that Microsoft has with its PC maker partners slash competitors, right? You know, the last time she talked, she basically said, you know, these guys didn't deliver what we wanted. We were kind of disappointed. And this time, you know, it was kind of a more nuanced thing. And there's this feeling that, you know, the right mixture of products are finally in the market and that everything's going to be fine. And I am astonished to discover that there are 1,700 different models of computers and devices running Windows 8 and Windows RT. 1,700.
Wow. That's a lot.
That doesn't even make sense.
Well, SKU. That's got to be every SKU, right?
I guess.
So if it's
I don't understand how you come up with eight gigs of RAM,
that's one SKU. 16 gigs is another SKU. It's got to be.
Yeah, could be.
Got to be.
Yeah.
Or there's a lot of strange Chinese, you know, things you never see. Right? Well, no, but you go to CES, you get a sense for that because you wander in some of the back halls and there's 800 companies from Shenzhen, China, making Windows 8 tablets. Actually, most of the time,
still,
they're not.
1,700 unique systems.
That doesn't, I think they've got to count SKUs. That's got to be SKUs. Yeah. Unique means different amounts of RAM. It's got to be.
It's a lot.
Still a lot. It's like the number 60 million.
It is a lot.
It's a big number. Not as big as 4 million, but still, if you're talking Lumias, 4 million ain't bad, right?
Not bad. Yeah. That's pretty good.
So that's what Nokia is saying they sold in the quarter. 4 million of all Lumias. So we don't know if it's Windows Phone 7 or Windows Phone 8.
Right. So all Lumias, 4.4 million for the fourth quarter of their fiscal 2012, I guess. No, under 2012. Which is pretty good. Last quarter, the previous quarter, it was 2.9 million Lumias.
You happen to know what it was before that, though?
Yep.
I thought they had hit 4.4 or something before that. I meant to look this up today.
I'm looking at Tim Anderson broke out the numbers on his site on Gadgets at IT Writing. And he said total Lumia sales this quarter, 4.4, last quarter, 2.9. It's a bigger percentage of the total number of smartphones they're selling because in Q3 they sold 6.3 million smartphones. So all those Asha phones and all other kinds of phones. And this time 6.6 million. Oh. So they're selling a lot more Lumias as a total percentage of smartphones.
If I'm a Nokia investor, I'm happy. Yep.
The thing that went down big probably is Symbian. I think they sold like 2.2 million Symbian phones, right? But they sell many more Asha phones than Lumias, which is fine because those are considered smartphones and they're reasonably modern or whatever. I mean, they're not Windows Phone, but they're a new line of products at least, right? I mean, am I making lemonade
Asha
here?
Asha is spelled how? What is Asha?
Does Asha count as a Lumia or not? I don't think it does.
And it's not sold in the U.S.,
I don't think so.
Yeah, let me look at this. I just wrote about this.
Asha phones are they're also smartphones. I think those are phones all running Symbian, perhaps.
They're developing world.
Yeah, 9.3 million Asha devices, 4.4 million Lumias, 2.2 million Symbians.
So Asha's not Symbian.
It's something like it's like Nokia Bell, I think, is the name of the
Bell,
which is of course based on
Asha is Symbian. It's S40, so it's the earlier Symbian. S60 is I think is the current Symbian. So they that's fairly primitive.
In the sense that
it's like a kin. That's what Jimmy.
Nothing is like a kin.
Jimmy fell in our chat room, getting off a good one. Good job, Jimmy.
It's good news for Nokia, especially because a lot of people have been saying they're not selling any. Today, they actually launched the Lumia 820 and the 920 in India. So they're starting to get it into more countries, which is good, too.
Yep.
So there's hope. Yeah. There's hope for us 3%.
Yeah, good news all around.
Yeah. We have our sights set on 4%, Leo. We're going to be fine.
We're going to be 5% any day now. I know it.
You know, the Macintosh for years, that was the number, right?
And by the way, the parallels between the Windows Phone world and the Mac world of that day are enormous.
Yeah.
You know, we have the same attitude problem about applications. Yeah. You know, we don't need your stinking application. Right. It's quality, not quantity, right, that matters.
I hear the same exact rationale.
Yeah, it is exactly the same. Yep. It's amazing to watch those people, I'm in this group, you know, fall into that, I don't want to call it a trap, but fall into that line of thinking and that line of argument so naturally, you know, that you do anything to protect the choice you made.
Well, I wouldn't fully knock it either, because I think it is true that, and kind of ironic that Windows Phone 8 is elegant in the way and easy to use in the way that the Mac was, not anymore, but that used to be. And it is kind of the choice for the rest of us. And I see the people who use Windows Phone 8 around here, around Twit, and they have that same kind of, yes, well, we're just a little bit more discerning attitude.
Yeah. You know? No, exactly. Yep.
And it's not unjustified, I don't think. I think it reminds me very much of the early days of the Macintosh.
It's very natural, I'm sure. Yeah.
We're just a little more, you know, we march to the beat of a different drummer.
I respect your decision. I'm just saying I'm smarter than you are.
Yeah, you may still think.
You know, well, you know, if you can't see it, then you clearly have a problem.
I have to say, you really can see different demographics, not quite demographics, social groups for each of the three big platforms. Four, if you include BlackBerry. BlackBerry, you know, you're a government worker. Or you work at a Fortune 500 company. You're not big shot enough to get whatever the hell you want. You got what the IT department gave you, and you justify it because you say, yeah, but I can really type on, I can use this, I could type on this. And then the iPhone users, they're kind of like the old hipsters who don't know they're no longer relevant, but think they're still cool. And increasingly, I'm seeing from verbiage from people saying, you know, the iPhone really is starting to feel a little out of date.
Yeah.
Even like the financial markets. I was watching Squawk Box on CNBC, and people like Jim Cramer saying, "Yeah, Apple's done. Apple's cooked. That's why the stock price is going down." And then there's Android, which is like the mass market.
It literally is the PC.
Yeah, it's the PC.
It's amazing. It's amazing how people would make this argument really early on that Android is just like Windows. You know. And it doesn't have to be, because these markets are so different.
Yeah.
But the way this world has worked out, it's exactly the same. It's exactly the same.
Kind of worked out that way. It's kind of the get her done. It's fine for me. Inexpensive.
Well, if you want to hack the heck out of it, you can.
And it's about to eclipse the iPhone marketplace in pure number of apps. Now, maybe not in quality of apps, but in sheer number. And then
see what you just did.
What's that?
Not in quality.
Well,
even though
there's
no real way to measure that.
Well, no, it's true though. I mean, I think this is going to change. We were talking about this yesterday on Twig. I think that developers
higher percentage of farting apps, is that the
Certainly Apple owns the fart app category. But I do believe that if you are looking to make an elegant application, you might go to iOS first. But I think that's going to change before the end of this year. That most people will just say, hey, you know, you got to develop for Android. We're waiting for the Instagram, the Path, the Flipboard, the first phone app that comes out on Android before iPhone. Right now, they come out on iPhone first, and then they move over to Android. And I think Windows Phone, I would love to see somebody do a killer app on Windows Phone 8 that just says, you know what's interesting? Samsung's talking about Tizen, which is a Linux phone, and there's the Ubuntu phone, which is also a Linux phone, and they both look strikingly like Windows Phone 8.
Of course.
Isn't that interesting? They're doing, you slide in from the edge.
Sure.
They have the four-way scroll. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
I think Microsoft really did actually pave a new road that others will follow their bud. Not that they're going to make any money at it. I don't think CES is not a phone trade show anymore at all.
Well, it's just general. There were a few.
Were there?
Yeah, there were a few Windows Phone announcements there, because you know, Verizon had a keynote, right?
That's right. Verizon was there in force. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Qualcomm talked about phone.
But they don't make
Intel
phones.
Even
they
talked
make
about
chips. Yeah. These are the people, the infrastructure guys. But you didn't see Samsung didn't announce new phones there. Nokia didn't announce new phones there.
I think, who was it?
Sony.
Huawei?
Huawei.
Oh, the Huawei.
The Chinese government announced new phones. Chinese military.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, yeah. that's good. Yeah.
And Sprint said they were going to have two Windows Phone models coming soon. I think that was a CES.
Yeah, Sprint and T-Mobile both. Said we're going to change things around. We're going to shake the industry up. Yeah, but it wasn't. I mean, I think that you're really grasping for straws if you're saying there were any big announcements at CES. These were not. These were not significant.
No.
And I don't. Was Nokia there? I didn't. I looked for them.
No, I don't think they were there. Were they?
They've been there in the past. Nobody knows because
nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares. They all announced. I mean, all the Windows phones were announced in October. Microsoft wasn't, for the first time in years, I mean, for a long time, the tradition of Comdex and then later CES was before the show began, the night before the show began, Bill Gates would give a keynote, which was a must-see. Steve Ballmer took over. It got to be a little bit less musty.
Or more musty.
More musty, less must-see. And this for the first year in 20 years, no Microsoft keynote to kick off CES.
The other thing is Microsoft was always that first big booth you saw when you went in that hall, right? They were like the like Sears used to be at the mall. You know what I mean? Like the huge
right.
What do you call that kind of a store? A
Keystone or key?
What I mean?
I know what you mean.
Microsoft is like Sears, Leo. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Qualcomm did the keynote. Anchor Store is what you're talking about. That's what
Anchor Stores. Yeah. Thank you.
Chat room. That was
I'm
a big
old,
booth.
So I remember malls.
And then right across from them was Intel. It was like Microsoft and Intel, the big booths in the corner of the central hall. That was it. For
you had to wade through it all to get to the junk in the back.
Yeah. Not anymore.
Now the junk's right up front.
Who
baby.
Was in the Microsoft slot? I saw it and I can't remember. I'm trying to
remember. Yeah. What's that? But it wasn't Qualcomm.
Yeah, it might have been. They did. They took the Microsoft keynote.
No, I know that, but I wonder if it wasn't
might
them.
Might have been. I'm trying to remember who was across from Intel. I noticed. I made a note of it in my head. Hisense. Thank you. That's exactly what it was. Hisense.
What do they make, like cheap recordable CDs or
Chinese
something?
Chinese TVs, baby.
Ugh,
wow.
You know who owns CES? The Chinese. Absolutely. Sure. It is.
Well, they own half this country, Leo. It makes sense.
It is. By the way, when you and this is probably more like what CES used to be, when refrigerators and washing machines are the big story in the keynotes, you know that it's not really it's not a gadget show. It's not a technology show.
Yep.
In any real sense of the word. It's the new slogan, by the way. Now the junk is up front. Thank you.
CES. We put the junk up front.
No more.
You used to have to go into that weird. There was a weird antechamber between the South Hall and what was over
was
at the
Chinatown
Hilton Hotel.
This is Chinatown, like Jake.
Yeah, it was like Eastern Asia Bill, Taiwan Bill, or something.
Yeah. Well, they make everything anyway, so it might as well. They might as well, have the booths. I didn't know this. Hisense makes Vizio? I don't think that's true. No, I'm sorry. You're wrong on that.
I was going to make a crack about Hisense made Vizio look like a high-end retailer by comparison.
Vizio is not made by Hisense. I don't believe
Vizio is like the BMW of their
compared to Hisense. Unless they're, I don't know, maybe there is Hisense more of a manufacturer?
They could be like the Asus type company.
It really looked like they were trying to sell Hisense brand products at CES anyway. Their slogan is innovation for life.
Nice.
They're the leading refrigerator brand in China. There you go. So now we know whose Hisense is. Number one in Chinese inverter air conditioner market.
Oh, that's not a sofa ad. It's like IKEA furniture.
Leading technology in TDS, CDMA, 3G, fashionable design and advanced functions in various GSM and CDMA mobile phones.
Yeah, these are the guys that make those Chinese ripoffs of like iPhone and Android phones. I have a Hisense iPhone. It's exactly like the iPhone.
Market share increasing steadily in Fiji.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah, it's a Chinese company. But, you know, it's all made in China. But what makes sense is that these companies should say, hey, why should we make this stuff for American companies? Why not just...
Yeah.
And the truth is, I think what you're really seeing at CES is twofold. It's the global economic downturn really has taken its toll. There's just no question about that. And that technology's kind of mainstream. It's at a plateau. It's reached, you know, it's you know, when you have Bluetooth refrigerators, you know,
we've reached the end of
the end of time
innovation cycle.
Yeah, we're waiting for something to break through.
Hold on, I got to pair the refrigerator with my phone.
I am not kidding. When I talked to Roger Chang and Patrick Norton of Revision 3, they said, "Yeah, all the excitement's in the Bluetooth pavilion this year."
And then you were waiting for them to laugh.
Yeah, and they didn't. They were serious. But however, you said Microsoft was kind of there. Whether it was a stealth presence, what's the deal?
Yeah, they were there in a private room behind closed doors. Ooh. They were showing the Surface Pro to people.
Oh, cool. Oh, why didn't I know that? I would have liked to have seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't know either. Surprise. Oh,
they didn't tell you?
I guess once you showed up at CES, they pulled you into a dark hallway and said, you know, come here.
Come on. Mary Jo Foley, she writes a column called All About Microsoft for ZDNet. It's one of the
funny
most...
that you think that would matter to Microsoft.
Paul Thurrott, the super site for Windows. These are two of the most read, and they do a podcast or two or three about Windows. It's heard all over the world by hundreds of thousands of people. But
I just snorted soda water. Thanks. It doesn't hurt at all.
But next time I recommend milk if you're going to be drinking during the show. But they don't tell you because that might have been a reason to go. Or you could have said to me, I was there. Hey, Leo, why don't you go see the Surface Pros? Would have liked to know how hot they get. But the battery life.
Yeah, supposedly. They let you use it for a few minutes with them watching you closely. Like, you couldn't do any video, but you got to try it out. You got to try out the pen that's going to be the magnetic pen that clips on the side and all. So, yeah, you get enough time to at least kind of get a feel for it.
I
would have liked to have done that.
Yeah, I would like. Obviously, I want to see it, but I get the feeling with this one that there are no surprises to be had here.
Yeah, I get that too.
It's going to be exactly what you think it is, you know. And they've already kind of hinted at the battery life not being great. You know, we know about the venting that is going to dissipate heat, and the people who have used it said that it was basically silent while they were using it, which is great. So that's good news. And then you basically have this trade-off. So it's like, you know, if this thing gets 5 hours of battery life and you know, it runs a full i5, you know, kind of mid 2012 chipset.
That's, you know, inspiring. 1920.
I know it's like, well, that's what I mean. It's like, it's just what it is.
Yeah.
You know,
it's your next PC.
It is. It really looks like a PC and seems like one when you hear people describing it. Like, I mean, everybody talked about the pen. Like, the pen was a big deal on the people, many reviews who looked at it.
We were all racing to buy those tablet PCs 5 years ago.
Yeah. I missed the pen, you know. Really what the iPad did wrong, frankly, is a lack of pen support.
Actually, you know, so my wife was looking at smartphones, and she was intrigued by that Note 2,
Galaxy Note. That's my
Samsung Galaxy Note 2.
Love this
And the
phone.
Reason
love
she said phone. Was because of the pen.
Stylus.
So I said, hold on a second. I need to understand this. You want to buy? You would possibly buy this thing because it has a stylus. And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Your handwriting is terrible. Why would you want to take notes with your hand?"
Is she a great artist?
No.
Maybe she wants it for all those Excel spreadsheets she uses.
I wonder if this accessory is not more of a like demo wear than it is actually useful to people. And I'm sure I'm going to hear from people who can tell me that's
yes,
wrong.
Yes, you are. You are.
Actually, you know, I don't use it ever.
If I were
an artist, I might use it more because it is it's a Wacom digitizer, so it's pressure sensitive, which is great. It means you can literally draw, and Samsung last year at CES was really making a big deal about that. They had they had artists all over Vegas at the Samsung Atelier. drawing notes, Galaxy Notes.
Right. Which was interesting. Kind of okay.
An interesting choice. But no, I don't think it's.
I have a Samsung Windows 8 tablet that has a pen and it has the Samsung Note apps.
Right.
And, you know, you kind of use it once and you say, yep, this is terrible. And that's kind of the end of that.
I agree with you. But if I were an artist and, you know, I really knew what I were doing and, you know, it might be kind of fun, I guess. I don't know.
Right. But what percentage of the population is an artist?
Right. You know, I mean, it's a specialty product, isn't it? Yeah. I've never used
people use pens for other things.
It's funny to me that this is a selling point for people.
The other thing
is these
computers have existed for years and years.
Right. And I don't know if it's a big
enough
slice that it's worth saying, hey, look, the new Surface Pro has a pen.
Yeah. Well, you know, in some business applications, people care, you know, like if certain
annotating,
like healthcare.
Doctors, they
do care. They're going to love that pen because it like hooks right in, you know, where on the Surface where you have the magnetic charger thing that Paul hates, you know, that thing.
Right.
They supposedly fixed that too a little.
Okay. I see. Okay. If they fixed it, I would love it. It's such a good
idea. Yeah. They say. There's people who saw it say the magnetic connection is easier now. It's not so hard to get that thing stuck in there. And that's also where the pen sticks too, I guess. So
interesting. Yeah. Not into a slot in the body where it belongs.
Yeah, it's like a pen. Stick the pen into the magnet on the side, I think.
Yeah. I don't think I can't believe anyone cares about it.
Somebody on Twitter, the stylist, Joe Elway, who's Aiden Finn, the stylist is my portable whiteboard. I love it for sales explaining. So these are the people who want the pen.
Oh, yeah, no, but we can hear from literally every single person that will ever use this thing.
Well, it's not, not a mass
sell.
They won't put broadband cellular in here, but they'll put a freaking pen on the side of it.
And
I mean,
it's
crazy.
You know,
and I should point out that, remember that when Steve Jobs introduced the iPhone, one of the big things he said is, styluses are a bad idea. You always have your finger. We're not going to use a stylus. He thought that wasn't the point. He said a lot of things.
Steve Jobs said no one reads too, right? No one wants books. Yep.
But Apple to this day does not ship.
I'm pretty sure Michelangelo didn't finger paint.
Right.
You know, but okay.
And a lot of people buy
another one.
Pens for their iPad.
Pen plus OneNote, killer. End of story, says Mike Bez.
Yeah, it's good with OneNote.
On Twitter?
No, our chat room.
They love.
Oh, it's Twitter. No, is it Twitter or the chat room?
Twitter. This is Twitter. I just saw. Sorry.
Oh, I can't see Twitter because I use Metric Tweet.
You'll get it next week. Later tonight, you'll see those tweets coming in, and you'll know what they were talking about.
I'm having Twitter issues, I think. Anyway.
I am too. Twitter's being weird today. I don't know.
It's probably a cheap thing to add that adds a certain percentage. I'm sure they do research.
I'm sure they don't. But,
It's a big company. You know, I'm sure they've looked this up.
The good thing that I was a little bit encouraged by this, I have to say, just a little bit. They did change the viewing angle on the Surface 2 from 22 degrees to 26. So obviously they are looking at what people who bought the Surface RT liked and didn't like, and they are making changes.
You mean the angle at which it sits when you have the kickstand?
The angle so it sits.
I can't believe they're fixing it. Now, is there going to be a retro fix for me?
That's why this didn't come out in September or October.
Yeah. Right. The Pro is the one they're banking on. In other words, by buying an RT, I was a guinea pig.
Oh, you sure were.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yep. Well, no, I don't think there were a whole lot of Surface RTs in testers' hands before that thing came out.
Right.
So, we are guinea pigs.
We couldn't. That was the only way they could do it. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if it was the only way they could do it.
It wasn't the only way they could do it. That's the problem. I mean, there was another way to do it.
No, they had to. We had to.
Okay.
We had to.
Yeah. Supposedly, they thought that would keep it quieter, I guess. And it did. It definitely did. But I think that's a trade-off, right?
Right. And are they going to use, I guess they wouldn't use Clover Trail for these or would they? These are going to be, Ivy Bridge.
This is a mess of a story, right? So when Intel announced this week that there was that new Clover Trail processor, Core i5, right? The Core i5 with a lower power version that was going to give you better battery life.
Yeah,
so a lot of sites, jumped to the conclusion, okay, this is why they waited for the Surface Pro. They're going to use this. I don't think they must be. They're not, though, right?
It's not what's in there. And this is the problem, because in the next 4 to 6 weeks, dozens and dozens of PC and device models are going to come up with that chipset in it. And so will Surface with the chipset that we had last year. I mean, it's too bad. Now, that said, I think it is fair to at least mention that if the early reports are correct, Microsoft has done something very interesting with the power, the heat dissipation on the Surface Pro, where there almost has to be a fan in it based on what the chipset is. But apparently this active cooling system they have, you know, where it vents out of the sides or whatever, apparently works, and I've heard that it's fairly silent, and that would eliminate one of the big potential complaints against this device that we were all worried about.
Fan
now,
noise.
On the flip side, the battery life may not be great, and that's too bad. So I guess we'll have to wait and see how that falls out.
Go hand in hand. Usually a quieter PC gets better battery life. A fan is a bad sign. It means a lot of energy is dissipating as heat, which means it's
well, sufficient. Yeah. Sure. Anyway, it's not the new super efficient chipset.
I think I was wrong on the angling, by the way. Steven Sandoff says on Twitter, the reason it's angled back further is because it's heavier. Yeah, that's right. It's 2 pounds instead of 1.5. So I guess that's why.
It's the same hinge, but it's leaning more, so it's bent more.
Yeah,
no, that's not true. It makes no sense.
Kickstand puts the center of the mass with the triangle form.
I hate to tell you, is unchanged by the mass. Unless they've built it in some different way. The fact that it's a pound heavier doesn't change the center of gravity. Unless they've put more mass up top.
Yeah, I mean, the componentry could be in a different location.
That's what it is, extra weight.
I think they did change how it's built, though. Yeah. I believe I read that in a couple of the reviews. Like, they actually changed to some degree how it's built because...
And that's
going to
be interesting, just from an industrial design perspective. The little changes between this one and the RT are going to be interesting, just to because we won't know in some cases why they made the changes. It may have been dictated by the componentry itself. Some of it may have been dictated by feedback from
we don't
RT,
know why,
although
because
I find that a little hard to believe.
Tells
but,
us not. Yeah. I don't have a trouble with actually. I think the angle on the Surface RT is fine, except that it's fixed. And so you have to... It's a laptop without a hinge.
I buy these... I have these little tablet stands that I buy. I don't know if you can see this thing.
Yeah, I use a lot of those. That's
they're
great.
Adjustable.
I use that one. They're nice.
Now, the problem is the Surface, of course, has this attachable keyboard. So if you're going to use the Surface with a keyboard, you can't use one of these things because that's where the keyboard connects and everything. So it's kind of I don't mean to say it's a weakness of the design, but it wouldn't surprise me that a future Surface model has an adjustable hinge where you can maybe go through three settings or to pick the one that you happen to like the most.
I just think a single fixed setting is not really the ideal, no matter what, no matter how carefully you.
Well, I mean, Apple has this folding cover thing for the iPad. It gives you one
two.
Angle. I mean,
yeah, it gives you two.
Oh, does it give you two?
Well, you could lie it, that way, or I guess it gives you one. Really.
Well, I meant the angle. In other words, when you fold that thing into the triangle,
right? That's it.
Like the origami thing. Yeah. you have an angle. There's one angle of viewing.
But I notice you prefer a different stand that gives you a variety of angles. So.
Yeah, because I have. Right, because actually using tablets, I've discovered that whatever that angle is never the one I want.
It's never the one you want. And that's the point, is that there isn't just one anyway. Depends if you're sitting in a chair or if you're lying in bed or whatever. I have a number of iPad stands that, in my opinion, the angle is too oblique. But, I think the best is adjustable. But that's not part of the Surface Click. By the way.
It's really, almost like you're asking for choice.
Yeah, they're really playing off that click. Stuff. I see these ads on football. I'm watching the playoffs and the football games, and boy, they really is that a selling point? Click? Is that the selling point?
It sounds, it does have that sound like a German automobile, doesn't it?
I agree.
The door closing. It's got that kind of solid.
It's wonderful. I will stipulate. It is a fabulous click. Is that why people buy something, a device, computing device?
Leo, people are going to buy this thing because it has a pen. So, I would say yes. Definitely. And they'll sit there by themselves giggling as they click it over and over again.
Okay. All right. I stand corrected.
So yeah, I think
they buy
so.
It for the click. I guess it's true when you know the salesman at the car dealership slams the door and lets it see how solid that is. But that from that you're supposed to impute some sort of quality of construction.
Years ago, we almost bought a VW Fox, and the guy told us that pound for pound, it was as safe as any Volvo. And I said, but it only weighs a third as much as a Volvo. Why would that be safe?
You didn't tell me you were going to do math on me.
Yeah.
It's a third as safe as a Volvo. He really said that? That's so funny. Pound for pound.
That was the moment we decided not to buy it.
Yeah. Yeah, you could have bought a thing. Those are good. Yeah. Remember the Volkswagen things where the panels just fall off? If you get in a crash, the whole
wish
car,
I could have bought one of those.
The whole car just falls off. Barnacle Bud says, people love it when I demo the click.
Do they buy one, though? Does it trigger any sales? No, silent no.
Oh, no.
just silence.
Oh, no. Haswell, late 2013. Clover Trail, holiday 2013. This is the Intel
the
news. You know, we went to the Intel
road.
We went over to the Intel booth.
Yeah. What's wrong?
Not compelling.
Not compelling. So I will say this. These three chipsets, I think, will make for an interesting year for hardware, like Windows hardware. The sad thing is the two of them aren't happening until very late in the year. And this is the CES dilemma, that you get all excited about this stuff. And
they can't even show product. It's not in fab yet.
Yeah. So fourth gen core processors, the Haswell stuff is interesting. Next gen Clover Trail, whatever they're calling that. I don't have the
Bay correct. Trail. I think it's Bay Trail, right?
Bay Trail.
I don't know. I actually don't know. So
it's like somewhere son of Sam would be lurking.
Yeah. So
I think it is.
Interesting. You know, I don't know if there's something. I know that 64-bit ARM chips are in the future, but NVIDIA with Tegra and then I think Qualcomm, where it was Snapdragon, both announced kind of evolutions of their existing products, which are essentially the same 32-bit platform. You know, multitudes of better performance here and there and so forth. But, you know, the true 64-bit stuff, I don't think we're going to see that this year, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, this we kind of have an idea of where these two hardware platforms are going for this calendar year. It's just that most of the good stuff isn't happening until, you know, second half.
Well, the most important thing you can tell us then is, should we wait?
It's always going to be better if you wait, Leo.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say this. I actually do think that there are going to be incredible systems based on this new low-power Ivy Bridge chipset. I know Lenovo's got some stuff coming out, like the Lenovo IdeaPad Yoga 11S, if I'm not mistaken, uses this chipset. So it's an 11-inch version of the Yoga, not running ARM, but running the new low-power Ivy Bridge. I bet machines like that are going to be fantastic.
All right. So, good. This delayed gratification is Web88.
Well, you know, when we look back on last fall and the launch lineup of devices, there's not much that sticks out in my mind as being got to have it. The closest thing to that might be, and I don't think it's out yet actually, is the ThinkPad Carbon X1 Touch or whatever that is very close to, like, you know, ideal kind of touch ultrabook type thing. But it doesn't, you know, the screen doesn't come off. It's not a convertible of any kind or anything like that. So it's just it's a PC is what it is. But, you know, that first gen was a little tough. And I think now we're seeing the makeup for that this spring. So I think the next couple of months will be pretty interesting. And then obviously the fall will be, you know.
I can tell you're just over the moon over this.
Well, it's a tough thing. I mean, you know, I want to be able to point to something and say, here's a couple of things you might consider, you know.
Yeah.
And really what I'm saying is, even, here's a couple of ways you could wait, you know.
I know. All those Microsoft had a whole YouTube clip showing off all these new Windows 8 and Windows RT tablets and PCs. And it was kind of showing them almost like new cars, kind of like revolving and beautiful. And then you're like, okay, but when are these coming? And you download spec sheets. You're like, there's no dates. I don't know. When can I even buy this? You know, is it like this year even? And that's what's frustrating, because a lot of these look awesome and then you're just like, yeah, but is it going to be in 6 months? Is it going to be next year? Like, you just don't have a good idea on a lot of them.
I would wait. In other words, I'm going to wait on the Surface Pro until the new chipsets come out.
Well, I don't know. So, in other words, if we accept what the one guy from Microsoft said on Reddit or wherever that was, this thing may get half the battery life of the Surface RT. The Surface RT gets really good battery life.
But half of it would be really decent.
Half of it
Four
would
hours.
Be pretty damn average.
Yeah, pretty damn.
So,
I believe he was right, because that was Panos Panay who said it, who's the general manager of the Surface. Yeah, so I would think if he had any hope at all that it might get better battery life, he might have hedged a little.
Right.
Or said, we'll have to wait and see.
Only time will tell.
Yeah.
Don't shoot the messenger unless you're Microsoft.
I think if that thing could just hit somewhere in the 6 hour range, it would be, assuming everything else falls into place.
6 hours would be fantastic.
It would be no brainer territory for a lot of people. I wish that there was a Surface that could hit that, where the little compromises they make don't kind of butcher the whole thing. Right. But, again, we have to wait and see. We don't really know yet. But
see what Lenovo does.
Yeah.
I like what they're doing.
I do too. Yeah, and they have a bunch of good stuff. Yeah. They have different types of convertible laptops. They've got a lot of interesting stuff coming.
At this point, if I'm going to get a Windows 8 Touch machine, I think I'm probably going to get a Lenovo.
I will say this for Lenovo. One of the things I do know about them, I've talked a lot about the Signature program and obviously about the Surface stuff, but the Signature program came out of something that Microsoft did called Velocity, and Lenovo was the earliest company, the first company that latched onto that stuff, because Microsoft had gone to the PC makers to say, hey, look, you guys are screwing up the experience. You're putting all this crap around there. Your computers take forever to boot up. We can make that go faster. And Lenovo was the only one who listened in the early days. Yeah. And they have a brand that they put on their computers. I actually can't think of the name of it right now, but they have a special brand they use. And to indicate that these computers have passed these certification tests that Microsoft has that are had come out of the Velocity program. And so even before there was a Signature PC, Lenovo was the one PC maker that was kind of doing it on their own as close as they could, And they don't bundle a lot of stupid stuff on their computers like some companies.
Yeah, I'm liking the Carbon. Now, that's a Windows 8 Touch device, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really gorgeous.
What's the Helix? The Helix was the other one that got a lot of
That's the one that's interesting because that's the one where the screen comes off. And you can actually put it back on backwards. And so if you're in a, like in a flight and the guy in front of you has got the seat back, you can still watch a movie on there or interact with it in touch. That one looks interesting too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Twist.
I think it's, the Helix. No, that's not the same as the Helix. So that's like
is the Helix the rip and go? Is that the rip and go one? See, look how many of these there are. We can't even keep them straight. There's like 5 million different names and form factors.
Yep.
And,
Lenovo.
That's
funny
good
because
too. Right.
They made one of everything. So they're going to throw this. It's like throwing spaghetti at the wall,
Yeah.
So the Lenovo, the Helix, rip and flip, they call it.
Rip and flip. There you go.
Rip and flip. When is
rip and flip?
But it's not on the Lenovo site now, so it must be. It's let's see when it says availability. Rip and flip. I like it. I like the idea. I wonder how that clicks. I'd buy it if it really clicked nice.
Only if it's magnet based.
Yeah, it's got to be magnetic.
Got to be magnets.
I like them saying it rips off because that's even what the Surface does. You kind of rip the thing off, right?
So late February for $14.99.
Aha, a date. Yeah, amazing.
Late February. And
but go back up to the specs because that computer, I bet, doesn't have the new chipset.
Oh, no. I think it's an i5. Let's see.
Yeah, there it is. So it's
third generation.
So it's the existing chipset.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that Lenovo does a good job, but I'd want to listen to that thing and see what the fan noise ever kicked in and what's the experience on that kind of thing.
Yeah. Microsoft Messenger is no more. Now we all supposed to use what? Link? Skype?
No. I wish it was Skype. Link. Why couldn't Link be the client?
Couldn't it be Link?
That would be so awesome. Link is beautiful.
It's killing the messenger.
I bet Link
service.
Goes next.
You think Link will, the and client. Then we'll all have to use Skype all Skype all the time. Wow.
Yeah, they're going
to
jam Skype down our throats.
Oh.
And really soon, March 15th, like the date came out this week when this is going to happen. It just feels like, man, are they going to be ready for this? It feels so not ready right now.
Well, they're going to be some surprised
people. Because it's not. It's this.
Yeah. I mean, it's really not ready.
Right. So there are very specific things people ask me that I just sort of don't think of up front. So they'll say something like, so there's this messaging application in Windows 8, and it works with messenger service. What's going to happen when the messenger service goes away on March 15th?
It will seamlessly integrate the new service.
And I guess you could use it for Facebook chat or something. I don't know. I mean, there's a similar app in Windows Phone. Same thing. What happens? It does other stuff. I mean, you use it for, SMS messaging as well. And also Facebook chat if you want to do that. But, there's built-in functionality for this network that's just going to be gone.
You know, in the U.S., I guess you guys use Messenger a lot. It's, more people use other messaging services, I think, in the U.S. But in Canada, Messenger was all the rage. Yep. I think it has to do with what your friends are on. But yep. The Canadians love Messenger. So you're going to hear
a howl. I don't know why, Paul. I'm on it because so many people from Microsoft are on Messenger.
Right. Yep.
Like that's the reason I got on Messenger.
Yeah, the circles I sort of travel in, that's what people are on.
Right. And that's what you use.
And it's not like I'm in love with the thing. Messenger has all kinds of problems, but mm-hmm. I mean Skype is borderline useless for this kind of stuff. Although I did do the switch just to kind of experience it so I could suffer in pain before everyone else has to go through it, but this is a tough one because what they announced it a few months ago or a month, 2 months ago, whatever it was. And at the time, it seemed like is like we're retiring the Messenger app, So that said to me, okay, they're going to take it out of Essentials. You just can't get it anymore, maybe.
But they're not going to turn the servers off.
No, they're turning everything off. Like they're shutting it down.
Yeah.
And, they're going to let you take your contacts and put them in the Skype. You can still keep talking and it will work. You won't notice a difference other than the fact that the application is completely and utterly different. But
where they're forcing the young people to is Facebook Messenger.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think that might because they're all on Facebook, so that might be a little bit of a mistake if you have a market share with a product.
Well, actually, so over the years, what's weird, Mary Jo sort of asked, like, why do I use this thing? I mean, over the years. Over the last couple of years, I should say, I would say more and more, except for Mary Jo and maybe Raphael, most of the text messages are, instant messages that I get through Messenger.
They're text.
Actually do come through Facebook.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Oh.
Yeah. So in other words, I think what happened was I made the connection at some point.
Right.
And so someone who used to use Messenger obviously got into Facebook chat. I don't know how they're using it. They could be doing it the same way I am. I don't know. But for whatever reason, I show up as online and they can chat with me.
Right.
And for all I know, they're doing it through the Facebook website. I've never actually, I should ask one of them. I actually can't now. I got rid of it. But
isn't the back end of Facebook Messenger Microsoft Messenger? Isn't
I doubt it.
That what it
they
is?
They bought a company called Beluga.
Oh,
I thought they did messaging. Some deal, though, with Microsoft for this, but I'm drawing a blank, not remembering. Chat room, anybody?
I don't know. I mean, I know you can integrate your Facebook contacts in Skype, right? It's possible.
Yeah, tied in.
Think about how dumb this is or how odd this is. I mean, I could get a text message. I keep calling it a text message. Mary Jo could send me a message from Skype over the Facebook network, and I would receive it in Windows Live Messenger. I mean, we're using completely different things, and it doesn't really matter. And I don't know. I wish that Messenger hadn't gotten as complicated as it got, and I wish that they would use Link instead of Skype in many ways because it's so simple and wonderful.
I think the kids today are using mostly SMS and SMS stuff like that. And
yeah.
I mean, I stopped using. IM was really big, but it was a brief few years.
Yeah.
It's annoying, frankly, to get the IMs. You're trying to work.
I still miss ICQ.
ICQ.
the little flower icon.
Yeah. And I
don't know. All I know is since Paul switched to Skype this week, either he's ignoring me more or he's just not seeing message.
This is the problem. It's Skype. And this is why, because I did the switch before and I switched back. I don't see things like I used to.
Right.
It makes it hard to communicate with people, which, if I'm not mistaken, is the opposite of what they're shooting for. But yeah. I just find it more difficult to keep track of what's happening. You know, Mary Jo, if she would message me before, I would see it, I think, right away, and I would respond. And now I'll be doing something, and I'll look down and be like, oh, what's going on here? I should go look at it now. Maybe people have been contacting me all day. I have no idea.
Maybe the point for Microsoft is if people can't use Messenger anymore and start using Skype, they leave the Skype client running. Maybe then they're more likely to use Skype.
Yep.
Not just for messaging.
That's totally what they're thinking. That is the strategy. They've said it. That's like, we want you to come in, start your day, turn Skype on, and leave it on all day, and then you'll use it more.
That's actually smart, because then you might be tempted to start making more phone calls with Skype since it's already running, and pretty soon it can become your telephony application.
I mean, I was already doing that.
Well, you were, but not everybody was.
Oh, I see.
But no, I think that that's exactly right. I think that's actually probably a fairly clever strategy. I'm surprised they admit it, but I guess.
Yeah, they did. They did admit it.
It's just like when, you know, they've got Bond attached to the table where he's going into the laser cutter.
Yes.
They explain their evil strategy.
He says, what, do you expect me to talk? And he says, no, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
So Microsoft is essentially telling us, no, now that our evil plans are reaching fruition, we can tell you it was all a ruse to get you to use Skype.
And this is why I like Microsoft better than Google.
Because they don't tell
they
you.
They admit it, at least.
They admit it.
Yep.
But Paul, you should talk about the tip you put out for Compact View, because I don't think a lot of people know about that on Skype, actually.
Yeah, this
and that might make it a little less horrible.
Yeah, so if you have used Skype, you know that in the normal default view, there's one window. And so if you and I were chatting or doing whatever, having a video conference like this, someone could send you a message, but it appears in the same window. So you have to switch back and forth in the same window. And so there's actually a view in... which is not how Windows Live Messenger works. There's actually a compact view in Skype, which I've enabled. So if you go to the view menu and then choose compact view, it splits the window. It splits it into two windows, in multiple windows, I should say. So the main window is like the main Windows Live Messenger window. It's your list of contacts. And then if you were to message me, it would appear in its own window. And if Raphael were to message me, that would appear in its own window. And that is way closer to the way I want that to be. I want those things to be separate, you know, and in the default Skype view, that's not how it works.
Right. Well, that's a good tip.
Actually, I wrote that one up today, actually.
Yeah. Very useful.
That was good.
Compact view.
I don't like the sounds that Skype makes too. I hate those.
Well, you
could
change those, right?
I know. I did. And I turned off a lot of them, which is probably another reason.
About all of them.
I hate that. Yeah, it's like the stupid. I don't mind. In other words, when Twit calls, I want to hear that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't, that's not the right way to say it. I don't care when people get online and offline. I don't want to be alerted to that. I mean, and the sound it makes when someone types me a message is like so grating and awful. I just don't like it.
There it is.
Yeah, it makes me, it's like the fingernails on the chalkboard, you know?
But that would be another article to write. And then I guess, you connect to Facebook.
Yep.
Bring your Facebook friends into Skype. So I haven't done that yet, but I'll do that right now. Look at that. Now they're all there, baby.
What's interesting, like I said, I mean, so someone could be on the Facebook website right now.
Well, this is
someone could be using Facebook Messenger, the mobile client, whatever it is. And they'll see that you're online. They don't know that you're using Skype. I don't really think that it matters, but...
This is weird. This is Skype.
Yep.
And now Facebook. It looks like it's a Facebook feed. They're all a Facebook... the Facebook feeds are going into Skype.
Yep.
Wow, that's weird.
I blocked Facebook from being able to do that because I don't want all my Facebook friends sending me notes like that.
Right, right.
Right.
Wow.
So you can turn that on and off. You can show like that you're not online to people who are on Facebook. Which is good.
But it's the tyranny of the defaults, as you've said many times, Paul. People aren't going to change that. They're going to leave it as the default.
As a rule, I mean, maybe just because I install Windows again and again so often, I hate having to make configuration changes over and over and over again.
Right.
I'd like to use this thing in as default a mode as possible because I just don't want to have to keep, you know, this stuff straight. But I don't know. This compact view thing makes a big difference.
I'm sorry. I'm setting my Skype settings right
now. The other thing is, you know, so Mary Jo and I, like a lot, we'll send each other these messages. Aww, it's text, you know. So the default font in Skype is like it's like 4 point something. I don't know. It's like this. It's like this teeniest text. I mean, I don't understand. This app is designed to help people communicate. I mean, how about bumping up the font size a little bit, you know? And you can do that. Obviously, that's a change.
It's, you know, the tyranny of the defaults. Everything is.
It is. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, yeah. It's crazy.
Moving along, Google. Now, Google had a big victory. I think we talked about it last week with the FCC. But one of the kind of the lower down on the agreement that they made with the FTC was that they would not pursue patent lawsuits on these kind of standard patents. I don't know if that's related to their dropping their claims against
Windows
and Xbox. So this is part of their agreement, then.
This is part of the standard essential patents, yeah.
SEC.
There's not too much to say here other than that they dropped. Two of the four, I think, had already run their course and... this was one of the two remaining ones, and the other one is being dropped for separate reasons. I think that's how this has worked. But this is the H.264 video playback from Windows and the Xbox. So they've dropped that, and you know, I don't know that there's a lot to say about this. It's just kind of a non-event, but they have dropped the complaint, I guess.
Yeah.
There's one remaining complaint. Which I'm also drawing a mental blank on right now because there were so many at that point. But one Google patent complaint not being dropped against Microsoft because they say it's not about the FRAND stuff. It's a separate issue. So they're keeping on with that part of the case.
Okay. Good. Well, at least there's one good outcome with the FTC investigation. Some of those silly lawsuits. Somebody told me, I don't know if this is true, it scares the heck out of me, that there is a patent troll suing Adam Carolla in East Texas for doing podcasts. He wants...
Oh, man.
Just want to stay under the radar on that one.
Wow.
What's a podcast? I don't know what that is.
Wow.
Can you jailbreak Windows RT? Paul Thurrott.
Wait.
Nope, there's more. Google Maps.
Oh, yeah, let's do the Google Maps thing.
All right. What's going on here? We didn't talk about that last week.
It just happened over the weekend.
That was such a mess. So if you were just to bring you up to speed, everybody, Google said we're not going to make a Maps app for Windows Phone 8, but no problem, you can use the web. And then they turned that off. But now they're saying, we'll turn... And they turn it back on, right? After everybody screamed.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So what happened?
This was one of the most convoluted stories. I was reporting this over the weekend. So Google said they never actually... Like, that we just never noticed, we Windows Phone users, and that they were always redirecting us, and we never could use Google Maps on the web.
But now you wrote that you couldn't remember, but you thought you had used it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had. And I got a lot of other people saying, I know I did. And one person gave me their logs showing they had. They said they had always been doing it, but now they have turned it back on and stopped redirecting so that you can use it. They say the reason they were redirecting was because it wasn't a great experience for users.
And they do that with other browsers. Although they allowed Windows Mobile 6.5 to work, right?
Right. Yeah. I find it hard to believe that they were worried about our quality of experience. And
wait a minute, though. In their defense, if it's really a crappy experience, you don't blame your phone. You blame Google.
Yeah.
Right. If it's really slow or sluggish or weird looking, you don't say, oh, my phone, my browser, IE is bad. You say, oh, Google's bad. So I think that that's not... If it were true that the browser didn't do a good job of running Google Maps, I could see how you would turn it off.
Yeah.
They were redirecting to Google.com. You just were getting a search window.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
They were. And, you know, a lot of people said to me, like, what do you care? Bing Maps are great and Nokia Maps are even better. So what do you care? Why are you even using Google Maps? Well, in New York, I've tried using Bing Maps for local searches when I'm walking down the street. And a lot of times I get the wrong directions, the wrong address.
Right.
So I think because there are, this is my theory, and I've had others say this as well. They think because there aren't as many users of Bing, that the database maybe is not as up to date, maybe not as good. And hopefully that will change over time. But right now, that's why I sometimes want to use Google Maps, even though I have Bing Maps.
Yeah.
I should have the choice, right? And Google kept saying to me, we're not blocking you. We're redirecting you. I say it's the same thing.
If I can't get to your site. Redirecting.
Yeah, we're redirecting right. to a useless map application.
Right. Yeah. The good news is they did change, and they changed just in a matter of days. This is rolling out all worldwide right now to everybody. So that's good. It's good that they reacted. For whatever reason they reacted, they did.
They said, well, we retested the browser, and it turns out it's fine. So
that was pretty good.
Never mind. Right.
So by the way, I just heard something, which I was not told I couldn't share, so I will.
Good, good.
Which is that Surface Pro battery life is a hair over 5 hours.
Oh, good. That's good.
So that's what we thought.
I eagerly await the Verge exclusive on this 2 weeks from today.
Yeah, we're saying 2 weeks from today, by the way, because more and more it's looking like January 29th could be when this is launched, Surface Pro. And in fact, we heard from one of our friends in Brazil today that they're hearing there's some secret Microsoft event in Brazil on the 29th, and they don't think it's a Windows Phone event because they say Microsoft doesn't usually do those events themselves. But they think this could be the Surface Pro launch
The only thing I would add, though, is I wonder, though, what launch means. Launch and availability might be two different things.
Yeah. As usual, right?
Everyone's talking Microsoft, about January, but I wonder now if the actual availability will be not quite that time, you know?
Yeah, it could be. Launch and availability with Microsoft usually don't coincide, right? They're usually two different things.
Yeah, yes, that's true, yeah.
Fine, now can I move on?
Yes, sorry.
Jailbreaking Windows RT? No, don't apologize. I didn't want to miss that, actually. That was good. Windows RT jailbreaking? No. Not true. Not so.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's obviously Windows RT is a sealed system, like the iPad and, you know, or iPhone. I mean, you know that on the Mac, the Apple side, that there's a lot of jailbreaking activity going along. And it's one of those escalation things where people figure out a way to break into iOS 5 and then iOS 5.01 comes out and it breaks the jailbreaking.
Right.
So Microsoft is going to be facing the same issue because they have the same system. You know, they have an apps platform and a store, and they're not letting people load indiscriminately, especially on the desktop side. So, you know, there are people that want to do that on their Surface RT, which makes me wonder why they didn't just wait for the Surface Pro, but, you know, whatever. So, this was interesting because I think the methods for making this work are very limited, but Microsoft sort of almost congratulated them, if I read this correctly. I think they were semi-impressed that they had figured it out, but then they hinted that a future update would probably...
Nice job, boys. Now we're going to break it.
Now we're going to flip a switch.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people are just dismissing this because they're saying the only way an app could work if you use the jailbreak is it has to still be recompiled to run on ARM, right? So doesn't that really limit the number of apps that would even be eligible to use with the jailbreak? I thought that, but then a guy today said to me, you know what it opens the door for are open source apps.
Yes. Which including is like Chromium, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so that's the interesting use case for this, right? I mean, I don't care if people are like just jailbreaking because they can, but if you actually could load some apps on that would be useful, that'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm sorry, did you say there is such a thing, or is at this point hypothetical?
It's real.
I believe. Yeah, it's real, but it's very limited, and it's not a mainstream thing. It's not like somebody can go install an app and just, you know, make it work. It's very common.
Although they posted it today on XDA developers, which is going to
how nice. How can
broaden the availability of the jailbreak
that's
a little
the
more.
Android. That's the Android cracking site.
Yeah, this Windows Phone cracking as well occurs there.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah. Oh, okay. Good. All right.
Yeah, they're ambidextrous.
Two-hand crackers.
Yep.
And there's a firmware update for RT, but we don't, for Surface anyway, but we don't know what it does.
Well, we do, but but they release these things as part of the, you know, the Patch Tuesday stuff. And right. then they don't document what it is. And so we right. have to ask. And when we ask, they say, oh, it's this is what it is.
Oh, you ought to know that.
And I don't understand why they don't just release this information. I mean, people who thought enough to go get this thing early would want to install this, know about it, and would see what they were fixing and say, this is great. This is, you know, one of the things I was complaining about.
Right.
So I think it's the second time, right? Second one?
Yeah.
Yeah, at least the second one.
And how would I install this, just out of curiosity?
Through Windows Update.
Okay. Which one?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Actually, in this case, the normal one.
The normal one.
The Metro one.
Not the desktop update. Okay. Just checking.
Well, you could do it either way. But, I mean, it would right. you know, unlike the thing we went through with Office before, you this one just shows up.
Oh, that's nice.
it's seamless.
But you can force it too, right? Can't you? By swiping.
Oh, no, of course. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah. Yeah, the two things that Microsoft said this firmware update fixes, what were they? Improvements to audio playback. So, you know, some people were saying they were hearing crackling noises when they had connected standby working. Well, this supposedly fixes that. And then this is funny. Additional capabilities for handling firmware updates. So it's a firmware update to fix the firmware update. Right?
Oh,
yeah.
I love that. Yeah.
But there may be more things. Those are the two they will talk about. But I found out one interesting thing because I said to them, okay, this is the firmware update for the Surface RT, right? So what happens if you are one of the few people who has a Windows RT-based tablet or PC that's not from Microsoft? Like, how do you get this? And here's what they told me. I'm going to read the statement. OEMs can and are providing needed firmware and driver updates through Windows Update.
Ah.
These updates are targeted to specific Windows RT models. All recommended OS updates are available to Windows RT devices at the time they are published. So you are going to get all these firmware updates, supposedly, but not yet. Some, they say they are being delivered. So
that makes sense.
It kind of reminds me of phone, right?
Right.
In a way.
Well, it is.
Well, actually, I was going to point out, you know, the interesting thing about this is Windows RT and Surface RT have only been out for, what, 2 months, 2.5 months? And they have already issued 2 firmware updates for that device. Yeah. You know, Windows Phone 8 has been out for basically the same amount of time. They've issued none. But, you know, Windows Phone over the past year maybe got that many, you know, firmware updates. I mean, when Microsoft is unfettered by the carriers and can deliver these things, they do it, you know. And hopefully this is the situation we'll see with Windows Phone 8 where, you know, we get more of this kind of thing going forward.
Right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, the tip of the week, the software pick, code name, enterprise pick, and the beer of the week. But first, a word from Audible.com. I love Audible. Paul loves Audible. We all know Audible is the audio bookstore for the 21st century connected folk. And even, especially if you're using Windows Phone now. Now, have you tried the Audible app on Windows Phone 8? I presume it works fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I was just looking in the Windows Store on Windows 8 because they had come up with an Audible
app.
App.
They have that app.
Which I still have installed, but it was pulled down for some reason. So I don't know if there was some kind of an incompatibility.
I forgot all about that. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's still on my computer, right? So it's still...
Well,
maybe
they'll bring it back. They probably that came from Audible, not Microsoft, I presume.
Yep.
So 100,000 books. You know why? They're busy recording new books all the time. They've got 9 recording studios at the Audible headquarters. One of the reasons they did that is because they realized science fiction was kind of underrepresented in audiobooks. Some of the great science fiction stories came out in a time when the pulp publishers couldn't afford to do or weren't interested in doing audiobooks. So Audible's recorded many of the classics under their Audible Frontiers program, and it's wonderful. I listened to a great book called The Wind-Up Girl. Actually, this is newer, kind of sci-fi, by Paolo Bacigalupi. Loved that. It was a sword and laser pick. That's why I loved it. Paul listens to a lot of history on Audible.com. We're going to give you a recommendation. The reason is if you go to audible.com/windows, you can get an Audible book for free. And so the question is, which book should I get? Paul, what are you listening to these days?
Where did you see this?
At the bottom of the notes. Isn't that you?
No, not my pick. The thing you were just showing. The Audible, what was it called?
Frontiers? Oh, it's Frontiers. Right on the front page. Oh, so he said all of a sudden he's interested in sci-fi, huh? Let me show you here. It's right over on the left under audiobooks. Actually, that's not it. Audible Originals.
I can't find it.
No, it's Audible Originals. That's the stuff that they record. So okay. Audible Frontiers, Audible Indie First. These are your independent books. Modern Vanguard. These are classics.
Gotcha.
Productions, Harlequin Romance, In Bed with Susie Bright. Don't know what that is. Never dared click on it. And Neil Gaiman Presents. Actually, you might be interested in the Modern Vanguard. This is actually a cool idea. Audible wanted to get these kind of groundbreaking. Remember the Vanguard Press?
Yeah.
The same idea, only it's audio, which I love. So they get these great authors like, you know, I mean, Philip Roth, John Cheever, William Faulkner, Donald Barthelme, and Betty Friedan, John Irving, Kurt Vonnegut. Yeah. And they make a point of, you know, making sure that all of their stuff is in there. I just love this. So Audible Frontiers is over on the left. But that wasn't... You wanted to pick something, I think, didn't you?
Yeah. So last year, the longest book I've maybe ever read, it's hard to tell because I didn't have the paper version of it, was something called The Second World War by Antony Beaver, who's written many, many books about World War II. In fact, I was so fascinated. I actually learned... I mean, it's weird. I keep saying this. I read these new books about World War II, and I learn new things about World War II. There was a couple things that I learned in this book, but one of the things that was kind of tossed around at various points throughout the story, through the history, I guess, was this notion that, you know, in the United States, we think of World War II as the cleanest, most perfect war of all time, and that we were fighting evil and that we won, you know. And the truth is we rescued half of Europe, but we also enslaved half of Europe. And the half of Europe that was enslaved by the Soviet Union. And, you know, we had said something to Stalin at one of the conferences where we were going to leave Europe as soon as this thing's over, which he was very excited by because he wanted to take over all of Europe. And in fact, only stopped where he stopped because we had the nuclear bomb and he was afraid that we would use it against him. But all of Eastern Europe was enslaved. And so there's this period of history that occurs right after World War II that I don't really know anything about because I live in the United States and we don't really hear about this stuff. And so this book, I believe, came out this year. I'm almost positive I read about this in the New York Times, but it's called Iron Curtain, The Crushing of Eastern Europe, 1944 to 1956. And I have to say, I have not actually read this one yet. This will be the next thing that I'm going to grab. But it comes highly recommended and looks fascinating. And it has to do with this period of time that, I just don't know a lot about and I'm very interested in.
Yeah, no, we all talk about the Marshall Plan, but we don't know what was going on in the Eastern Bloc during all of that, the rebuilding of Europe and all that. I can't wait.
Well, we knew this guy was going to take half of Europe, and we just basically let it happen.
Right. It's all yours.
Have fun with that.
Actually, I learned kind of about that from that other World War II book that you recommended, The Storm of War, where he talks for the first time because of the fall of Eastern Germany and of course, the end of the Soviet Union when they start to get all these records.
That's why these new books have all this new information.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's
fascinating.
Excellent.
I agree with you. So I'm putting this on my list, too. Ann Applebaum, Iron Curtain, The Crushing of Eastern Europe, 1944 through 1956. See, you get smarter thanks to Audible. Get your free book right now, audible.com/windows. Do get the app. When it comes back to the Metro store, it's beautiful, but there were some bugs, and I suspect that's why they pulled it out. And, of course, on a Windows phone, Android, and iPhone, too. audible.com/windows. Your free book awaits you. All right, let's start off with Paul's tip of the week.
This one is sort of a pseudo software pick, I guess, but this is a little secret about this thing that nobody knows about, which is when Microsoft made the move to Xbox Music on Windows 8 and on Windows Phone 8, they lost some stuff that was on Zune previously. And one of the things they lost was podcast support.
Yes.
So on Windows Phone 8, if you live in the United States only, and I have no idea why this is the case, there is on-device support for podcasts. But if you're using Windows Phone 8 anywhere else in the world, there isn't. And so you have to turn to third-party applications. But There is an app in both of the app stores for Windows 8 and RT and for Windows Phone 8 that, in fact, is written by and is still updated by guys from the Windows Phone / Zune team who do this on the side. And they use the back-end Zune Marketplace podcast information, the library and so forth, to supply all the information for podcasts. So this is effectively a Metro-style version of the Zune Marketplace podcast support available for Windows 8 and for Windows RT and on Windows Phone. And it's a podcast app that many people use these platforms have already heard of, but it's simply called Podcasts, all caps with an exclamation point. And if you're looking for Microsoft's follow-up to the Zune Marketplace podcast support, there's not going to be an official one, but this is exactly the same thing on the back end. And it features many of the same, you know, it has all of the same information as far as like the catalog, but it has many of the same features, you know, the ability to stream, the ability to download and subscribe, all of that stuff. And so if you're using Windows 8, Windows RT, or Windows Phone 8, or Windows Phone 2, I think it's just on Windows Phone 7 if you want that. That's the app to get. And so just kind of an interesting little tidbit, if you will, about this app, which I don't think anyone knew about.
And which I think we probably can thank Rob Greenlee for.
I think we can.
They did a much better job than Apple did. That Apple app is a piece of junk.
Yes, yes it is.
Your software pick is also a phone app.
Yeah, you know, for the past couple of years, obviously, I've been doing the trying to do the weight loss thing. I've been miserably unsuccessful, obviously. But the app that I was using last year and I'm now using again this year for tracking calories, both calories in with via food and calories out via exercise, is something called MyFitnessPal. And I was using it on Android through the Kindle before. But now there's a version on Windows Phone. And I got to say, the version on Windows Phone is awesome. It's really, really well done. It's a beautiful, you know, Metro-style Windows Phone app. Obviously, locks into the same data you get on the back end. You can do this stuff on the web. You can do it through any of the mobile apps. And the Windows Phone version is just fantastic. And so, in kind of in the theme of New Year's resolutions, this is kind of an awesome calorie tracker if you want that kind of thing.
I install, download all of those, and then just never use them.
Yeah, I actually use this. I used this one for many months last year, and cool. I'm using it now. But yeah, the Windows Phone version is really, really nice.
Looks easy to use, nice interface.
Yeah, beautiful,
and it's free.
Yep,
you can't knock free. You can knock it, but you look like it ain't great. Enterprise pick of the week. This one, I'm sure, is not free, but maybe, who knows?
It surprisingly is free.
Oh, wow.
There's a really interesting blog on TechNet called Ask Premier Field Engineering Platforms. Kind of a tough name there, but if you look for them, you'll find them. And Premier Field Engineering at Microsoft is part of Microsoft Support, and it's for customers with Premier Support. But they make a lot of information available to anybody who's interested, and they post up a lot of really good stuff. Right now they have up a post, the most popular post of 2012, and it has lots of enterprise tips that I think people would find helpful. Things like when they had the Active Directory domain time problem, they posted about that and how to fix it. For Active Directory internals, a lot of good Hyper-V information, storage spaces. So you can just go and use their blog and get access, even if you're not a Premier Support customer, to all their learnings. And they are very big Windows Weekly fans too, I hear. So good stuff, and good they made this thing they called the mixtape, which is their best of post that's up now.
The mixtape.
It is
so well named, the Ask Premier Field Engineering Platforms blog.
Yep.
But you can, if you're into that stuff, it probably easy to remember.
Yes.
And our buzzword, not code word, but buzzword. Are you going to change this to be more buzzwordy than code wordy?
Nah, I just didn't have a great fun code name pick this week, buzzwords. But I do have a good buzzword pick of the week, because you all are going to hear about this next week at length. January 15th, next week, Microsoft's going to have a webcast for us in the press. It's just for us. It's not, sadly, for the public, but we're going to be able to write about what they tell us. It's going to be all about Cloud OS. So Cloud OS is the name that Microsoft now uses for pretty much everything almost in server and tools business except for Visual Studio. So it's how they brand Windows Server these days. It's how they brand Windows Azure. It's how they're even branding some of the SQL Server products. And they're going to talk about next week how System Center makes this platform even better. So I think we're going to hear a lot about System Center Service Pack 1. Maybe we're going to hear about Windows Intune next week. So you'll hear a lot from us all about Cloud OS next week. So when you hear that, just think server and tools pretty much. And this is what Microsoft's calling everything from the server part of server and tools.
Cool. Very cool. Look forward to that. And finally, it wouldn't be Windows Weekly without a beer pick of the week, Mary Jo.
Yes. So yeah, I'm going through my beer challenge that I talked about last
week. How's that going, by the way? I'm surprised you're not drunk.
Godspeed, by the way.
So for those who don't know, 40 beers in 30 days?
Yeah, 40 beer styles in 30 days. I've done 17 to date. I've gone to the gym a lot, too. Probably as much as I've been in Rattle and Hum, I've been in the gym.
Do you have in front of you the styles that you have consumed? Can you just rattle those off?
I've consumed a lot of styles. Porter, Stout, Imperial Stout,
I wouldn't have thought there were 40 different styles. That's why I thought it was 40 beers.
Yeah. 40 styles. Yeah, which makes it even more challenging. Wow. I've been following a lot of new people from Windows Weekly on untapped.com because I didn't know how many beer drinkers we had who listened to this podcast, but we have a lot. And yes, one of them suggested a beer that has the perfect name. It's Control plus Alt plus Del. Control Alt Delete. That's a real beer name from Davidson Brothers.
Obviously,
Davidson
geeks.
Brothers. Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, like the biggest geek name ever on a beer, at least for Microsoft geeks, right?
Love it. Yeah.
It's a German alt beer, so like a dark style alt beer that's very bitter. And I asked the Windows Weekly listener, I'm not recalling your name right now, who had this beer, how was it? And he said, it was okay, but the name is even better than the beer. So I still love to try it, though, just because of the name, Control Alt Delete.
And I love, by the way, we can get it right here in Santa Rosa, so that's good. And I love the description of what an alt beer is on this website you suggest, beermenus.com. They say alt beer is like the rush of beers, a great style that doesn't receive nearly enough airplay.
I disagree.
I love it. So alt beer, have you had any alt beer on your, is that one of your 40s now? I guess it is.
It's on my list and I have not yet.
Not yet.
So,
do you have a list? Like, do you know where you're going? A map, a roadmap?
Yep, I have a roadmap.
Beer consumption.
I have a beer roadmap.
What's your favorite so far? I mean, I know what your favorite has been in the past, but
that's great.
Yeah. Favorite so far, tough to say. I've had a lot of ones that I've never had before that have been interesting. So I'm not sure what I would say.
This is a great thing, this beer challenge.
Yeah.
Because it really is going to broaden your horizons with regards to the kinds of beer you like.
Indeed. And, you know, another great thing that happened was the untapped.com guys listened to Windows Weekly, which I didn't know. And they heard us give them a shout out last week and said, hey, guess what? We're doing a Windows Phone client for you guys. And it's going to be out probably in the first quarter. Yep. So they're big Windows Weekly listeners, too. Who knew?
Whoa, that's awesome.
Yep.
That's great. And I'm not drinking any because, like Paul... I'm fighting a losing battle with the belly, but I wish you the best. And by the way, you can't taste these. It's a pint.
Pints.
I should donate my great Stein of Science to you.
Stein of Science.
We had a guy on Triangulation yesterday who does two. He's a beer lover, but he's also a coffee lover. And he makes and sells a cold brew coffee he calls Black Blood of the Earth. But he also, it's pretty awesome. It's there's one I've got that I'm holding on to called Death Wish that you don't drink it unless you absolutely need caffeination. But he sells also steins, because he's a beer drinker, made out of scientific-grade dewars. These will maintain temperature. They'll lose a tenth of a degree an hour. So I should really just donate this to you, because I don't use mine very often, Mary Jo. But you could put a pint in there And it would stay cold for days.
Wow.
You might need that.
That sounds cool, actually.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Literally.
He has one that's an imperial gallon. You probably don't want to drink an imperial gallon of beer. He has
don't
done
tell
so.
Tell her about things like that. Mary Jo might not know that.
The imperial gallon beer challenge. Imperial gallon is 4.3 liters.
I'm going to fill my hot tub with beer.
Yeah, you could if you had an imperial gallon just lying around. Paul Thurrott is at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. It really is a great place to keep up on what's happening with Windows. And an objective observer of the Windows scene, which I really, really like. You can count on Paul to tell it like it is. WinSupersite.com. He's also the author of Windows 8 Secrets and Windows Phone Secrets, and he's working on an online version of the Windows Phone 8 Secrets. What is that? WindowsPhoneBook.com? Is that it?
Yep.
A Squarespace site, I'm proud to say. Windows Phone 8.
Yes, it is.
Windows Phone... What is it? Windows Phone Book.
Windows Phone Book.
.com. So there you can go. You can read it online free. Free, free, free. Mary Jo Foley writes about Microsoft for Ziff Davis, ZDNet. Do they even say Ziff Davis? ZD doesn't stand for anything anymore, does it?
Nah, Ziff Davis is a whole different thing now. Crazy.
So just ZDNet. Well, the easiest way to do it is ZDNet. Just go to allaboutmicrosoft.com.
Yes.
That's like Kentucky Fried Chicken doesn't stand for... KFC doesn't stand for Kentucky Fried Chicken anymore. Because that nobody wants to eat fried food, apparently. Except everybody does want to eat fried food. They just don't want to know it. So this is not ZD. We don't know what ZD stands for. But we do know all about Microsoft.com. Also a great place. The place to go. If you want to know all about Microsoft. But those between those two sites, that's it. That's your entire reading for the week. And, of course... Then you should tune in every Thursday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC, for Windows Weekly. If you can't watch live, and we love it if you watch live, you certainly can listen after the fact. We have audio and video downloads available online at twit.tv and wherever better beer casts are found. I think I called them beer casts. I never did like the word podcast.
Beer cast is a great name.
We want to do, we're thinking maybe, you know, of a coffee, chocolate, cigars, beer, you know, just basically edible vices cast.
Right. I like this because every one of us still has a role in this new company.
Exactly. Exactly.
That would be a great podcast. You guys should do that.
Well, I think if we do, it'll be with you and Paul. And as you said,
and
every
Liz.
Other host.
You got to get Liz.
Liz is a beer drinker, isn't she? Yeah. My goodness, she's a great Stein of Science all by herself. Thank you, everybody. We will see you next Thursday. And thank you, Paul, Mary Jo.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
See you next on Windows Weekly.